Hey there, and welcome to the Maladjusted Podcast. I'm going to take a break this week from talking about art mindset and the studio habits of mind for my art classes, because I want to say a little bit of something as we're getting into May and we're getting closer to Memorial Day. And the last 2 weeks of school, I wanted to do a podcast for my civic students on the Gettysburg Address. So I don't know that anybody is ever going to invite me to speak on Memorial Day at any kind of veterans thing, but as a teacher, every year we try and have kids memorize, not this whole thing, but a portion of it, and help them understand it. So I would have made this as a video, but I've kind of got a COVID beard going and, you know, bad hair without taking a shower and no real place with lots of good lights or neighbors that aren't mowing the lawn or working on their cars to be able to record that. So I'll do this here. First, just a little bit of back story on this battle. One of the bloodier battles of the Civil War's Battle of Antietam, which was September 17th, 1860-something. But this battle of Gettysburg, which lasted 2-3 days, July 1st to July 3rd in 1863, ended up becoming, after Antietam, the bloodiest battle of the Civil War. And a lot of people kind of thought of it as a turning point in the Civil War. Robert E. Lee, the Confederate general, had some victory over Union forces in Chancellorsville. And he marched his army from Northern Virginia into Pennsylvania in late June of 63. So this was now not defending the South. This was invading the United States. So it was going from one thing where you are seceding from the Union or rebelling or committing treason to this is an attack. You know, this is the first time that the United States had ever been invaded. And in spite of Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor and the terrorist attack on September 11th, 2001, this is really when an army is marching onto American soil. Boy, something like 51,000 casualties in this war. You know, 10,000 killed, and on each side you have maybe 31,000, if that includes mortally wounded, people that end up dying from their wounds from that battle if they didn't die on the battlefield, and 39,000 Confederates and 31 Union. Just a mess. Okay, so here's some background on the speech. Bodies are quickly buried, right? And shallow graves. And the rainy season comes after the summer and the early fall. And this valley, this mess between Seminary Hill and Cemetery Hill in Pennsylvania doesn't smell too great. And a lot of people are worried that there could be some kind of disease epidemic. And so they go to work reburying them. They're in more formal graves. There had been a cemetery there. And they get to thinking, hey, this should be, you know, we should do something special about this. And there's a committee. They want to hold a dedication ceremony. This is going to be a Soldiers Veterans National Memorial Cemetery, and they want to do this big. So they get one of the greatest speakers at the time, an orator. People actually, this is before radio, before movies, before TV, before the internet, you know, people actually paid to hear people talk. You know, whether it would be in a theater, you know, vaudeville kind of thing, or a tent, you know, religious church meetings, revivals. They had things, we think of TED Talks. They had things where you could learn. Lost my microphone there for a second. Called Chautauquas. You know, people all over the country would gather to these things to hear famous people talk. And one of the people that was in big demand was a guy from Massachusetts. I don't know if he'd been in state government or what his different jobs were, but this speaker named Edward Everett, right? Who you never probably have heard of. National Park website says that he was hired to deliver the main speech, keynote address, and he was going to... the committee also happened to ask President Lincoln if he would make just a few appropriate remarks. So the president wasn't even top billing. So the ceremony happens on November 19th, 1863. And this Everett fella, the guy talks for like 2 hours about the causes of the Civil War and what led to the Battle of Gettysburg. And then finally he sits down and Lincoln stands up, talks for a whole, 2 minutes in what has become known as the Gettysburg Address. And his speech honored the brave men who fought there. And let's get to it. Let me take a second with my microphone again, and we'll get on it. Here we go. Lincoln said, 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now, if you don't know by now, a score is a unit of measurement. It means 20 years. So 4 score plus 7, that's about 87. You do the math, subtract 1776 from 1863, 87 years. So what he's talking about is the Declaration of Independence. The important thing is not the date. The important thing is the conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Conceived in liberty means that the United States, it's not an idea that somebody just pulled out of their ear, okay? It was based on principles of self-government and limits of law and order, even on our rulers. You know, that's a British tradition of rights and freedoms going all the way back to the Magna Carta, way back in 1215 AD, when the barons at Runningmede made Prince John the First sit down and sign this thing, guaranteeing that he couldn't do whatever he wanted, but that they had rights too. Excuse me. This idea that people agreed to set up governments existed to protect our rights and basic needs together. You know, that we entered into a contract together. Without spelling that out, Lincoln basically is insinuating that the Southern states had broken that contract and violated the Constitution when they rebelled and left the Union, insisting instead on a form of tyranny, which included slavery. Which brings us to the dedicated to a proposition that all men are created equal part. The part of the Declaration, which we all remember, is we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. Well, maybe Jefferson just meant that American colonists had as much right to self-government as the dukes and barons and aristocrats in the House of Lords and Parliament did, but Lincoln was now making it clear to the mostly poor immigrants fighting for the Union side in the Civil War that this war isn't about some abstract ideas like forms of economy or federalism versus anti-federalism. Southern politicians, when they threatened to leave, they threatened over slavery. When they left, it was over slavery. So make no mistake, if we believe that all men are created equal, you know, are we willing to fight for it? That's essentially what Lincoln is saying to Americans in this line. Reminding us about what we said in our Declaration of Independence and holding us to it. Making this, in case anybody was confused, this is not them just wanting to be their own country. There is a more moral issue at the center of this here. Next part. Lincoln said, Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. Lincoln wanted to make the stakes clear. If we were willing to just roll over and let the Confederacy secede, we didn't really believe in liberty and equality, did we? Hey? That's why this was a test. It was testing not only whether genuine democracy could work after 87 years, and not only our resolve, but whether or not we really believed in the principles that we'd been claiming to believe in for the last 9 decades. Okay, back to Lincoln. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. Thank you, Captain Obvious. Tell us something we don't know. It's printed right here on the program. Well, okay. Maybe I sound facetious. I don't mean to be disrespectful to Lincoln, but he is actually using a form of literature, a form of rhetoric that is ancient. The ancient Greeks used this. They call it a eulogy. It was kind of a typical funeral speech, which is a little bit ironic. Well, maybe ironic's not the right word. He's at a cemetery. There's dead people. He's dedicating the cemetery to those dead people. But it's almost as if the funeral is not for the dead people. The funeral is for the country. And so maybe he did that on purpose because it was fitting and it was the format. And it was very formal. Maybe he was doing that to get people's attention. Maybe that would be a little shocking, a little not so obvious. Back to Lincoln. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate. We cannot consecrate. We cannot hallow this ground. The brave men living and dead who struggled here have consecrated it, far above our poor power to add or detract. Now that's saying something both humble and profound. It's not about him. It's not about Lincoln. It's not about Edward Everett or Pennsylvania Governor Andrew Curtin or the mayor of the town council of Gettysburg or the president and the professors of the Gettysburg Seminary or the members of the committee to establish this memorial there. It's not about the people at the ceremony. It's about the thousands of soldiers killed, mortally wounded, injured, and captured in that battle. Soldiers fighting to keep the United States alive, fighting to keep liberty and equality alive. That's what made this a holy place. So again, you know, we've come here to dedicate a portion of this field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It's altogether fitting and proper that we should do this, but in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we can't consecrate, we can't hallow this ground. The brave men living and dead who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. What he's doing here, he is using religious language to make this seem big, to make it a spiritual thing. And he's using repetition. Repetition for effect. Dedicate, consecrate, and hallow. They're really all synonyms. To make something holy, to hallow, is to say that it's special, set aside for a purpose, God's purposes. To be consecrated means to be made sacred, revered. Lincoln is deliberately using religious-sounding language. To be dedicated is to be set aside for a special purpose. This would no longer be farmland or wilderness. This would be a cemetery, but not just a cemetery. A special one for military dead. a place that needed to be remembered, an event that needed to be remembered. But Lincoln was about to go on and make a point that it wasn't even the soldiers that we need to remember. We needed to remember the cause that they died for and to take up that cause. Here's what Lincoln says. He says, "The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here." Well, on the other hand, little did he know that more than 150 years later, people all over the world remember and study this little 2-minute speech. Well, on another hand, had you ever heard of Edward Everett before I mentioned him a little bit ago? Yeah. Again, here's what Lincoln says. "It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced." Lincoln wants us to be dedicated. Lincoln wants us to be consecrated. Lincoln wants us to be hallowed. Not to get too creepy or religious here, but Lincoln wants us to be baptized in the blood of the fallen soldiers at Gettysburg. To be commissioned for a mission. To be initiated into a sacred brotherhood of knights fighting for the same things that they were conceived in and dedicated to. Whew. That's heady stuff. This is more than just a coach's pep talk at halftime in the locker room to a team that's losing an important game. This is a call to something holy, something akin to saving the world, something our future depends on. He's evoking destiny itself. Here's Lincoln. "It is rather for us here to be dedicated to the great work remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave their last full measure of devotion." Devotion is another religious sounding words. The morning, if you read some scripture and maybe somebody's comment on it and it may be a prayer, you call that your morning devotion, right? A devout believer isn't just a casual believer. They're disciples, they're pilgrims, they're apostles. They're on a mission for God. So what's the cause? Just sending Lee's army back to Virginia? Restoring the Union? Punishing treason? Or was it something even bigger? Was it preventing the death of a nation? Remember what Lincoln said, that the war was testing. Testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated could long survive. Conceived how? Dedicated to what? Conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Lincoln is calling us to fight for liberty and equality. Principles he felt were worth dying for. Lincoln again. "That we here highly resolve that these dead should not have died in vain." To resolve, to dedicate, to decide firmly on a course of action. Not just an empty promise, like a New Year's resolution kind of resolve. To die in vain. Well, vanity is just for show. To die in vain means without success or real result. To die for no good reason. If we're serious about a memorial, or about Memorial Day, it's not enough to acknowledge their deaths or to admire their cause if we aren't also dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal, then it doesn't really matter that they died. If we're waving the Confederate flag, why'd they die? If we think that we're better than everybody else because of our skin color, which, by the way, we didn't choose, then what was the point? "We here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. For impact's sake, I should probably let Lincoln have the last word, but I want to mention that Lincoln, again, is using religious imagery. He's evoking resurrection. He's ending on a high note, giving us hope that the nation will be, that was being tested, whether or not it can long survive, that it can survive, and that its new life will be stronger, more robust, and more honest, living up to the promises of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, not just for the wealthy land-owning white males, but for everybody. Is it any wonder, then, that 100 years later, in 1963, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. would evoke both the Declaration of Independence and Abraham Lincoln in his famous I Have a Dream speech, where he shares that he had a dream that one day a nation would rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. Again, religious language. A creed is a statement of belief. Now, what is it that we hold self-evident? That all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Well, finally, I want to let you know what I've tried to teach my civics classes for the last 12 years. And I, Lord willing, maybe someday I'll get this opportunity again. Still a little bit salty about not getting to teach it. I love it. But let me just end with this much. That of the people, by the people, for the people bit. Right? The one that everybody seems to be able to remember without ever trying to memorize any part of the Gettysburg Address. Try remembering this about it. How can government be of the people? Because you don't have to be born into nobility or aristocracy. If all men are created equal, like British philosopher John Locke postulated, we're all capable of self-government. We're all in the pool of potential candidates for rulers and leaders. Whether the governing means just voting, having input, having your say, exercising your First Amendment rights to speech and petition and press and peaceably to assemble, petition to redress, or actually running for office. That's how it's of the people. Supposedly, we are our government. How can it be by the people? Again, because it's our right to see that we're endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights means that we all have the inherited prerogative to participate and be represented, to have some influence. That's the true meaning of liberty. Not that you can do whatever you want, wherever you want, but that you are free from any one person or segment of society controlling all the rest of us. And how can government be for the people, of the people, by the people, for the people? Well, in practice, this is really hard. I mean, we've got 240 some years of how it's developed and evolved. We've got people that have more money, and people have more education, people with the best lawyers, what have you. But for the people, well, let's take a look at Thomas Jefferson's social contract theory found in the Declaration of Independence. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And when any government becomes destructive of these ends, it is not just the right, but the duty of the people to overthrow that government and start about setting up a new one that is going to secure their future happiness and safety. Paraphrasing there. But, you know, other framers and founders, John Adams and James Madison, they made similar statements that the purpose of government is to protect our rights and the well-being of the people, not to preserve the power and privilege of some ruling class. as had become the case in most of Europe in the 1770s, says Jefferson was accusing of King George III. It's not us and them. We are our government. So how can we be here for each other? I guess that's another lesson for another day. But don't stop asking yourself these questions. One, how can I ensure that these dead will not have died in vain? And how can we make sure that this nation has a continual, constant, it's a process, new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from this earth? I don't know about you, but I personally think the answer to those questions is being devoted to the same cause to which they gave their last full measure of devotion, and being dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. So maybe ask yourself that. Are you devoted to the same cause? Are you dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal? I know, not everybody agrees with me, or Abraham Lincoln, but that's America. Take care.